There was an 80s glam rock group called Poison. I used to have my hair like that, one of the guys in the middle. I wished I could have had my hair like that, really, but never quite grew it that long. But they were pretty popular. I think there's a revival. I was going to show you a picture of them now, because they look kind of like that, but with a bit less hair and really wrinkly. But they're still going, apparently. And they released a song. It was probably one of their most famous songs, which was "Every Rose Has Its Thorn." I put a few of the lyrics up there. And it goes on a bit and then says, "Every cowboy sings a sad song." And then it talks about the pain in relationships. "So it's been a while now. I can still feel so much pain like a knife cuts you. The wound heals, but the scar remains. Every rose must have its thorn." Is that a good description of life? That there are good things in life and there are bad things in life, and they kind of balance each other out, like kind of yin and yang. There's good stuff and there's bad stuff. You know, you have to have roses, but you also have to have thorns. And life is kind of a big lottery of how much rose and how much thorn you get, how much good and how much bad that happens, how much happy and how much sad you get. Some people might think that, but instinctively we're not sure if that's true. Because it seems kind of unjust and random, and that doesn't seem right, that it is unjust, seemingly, and random. And Genesis 3 helps us understand why there are roses and why there are thorns. There are roses, there are mountains, there is beauty, there is music, there is laughter, there is achievement, there is sex, there are children, there are beautiful sunsets, and there is chocolate. Life is good in many ways. And that's because God did a good job of making the world. Those of us who are here regularly would have read through that from the first couple of chapters of Genesis. He made the world. He made everybody in the world, everything in the world. He made all of us. He made the first man, Adam and Eve, from whom everyone else descends. So God made the world and he did a good job. There are roses. There are sweet things. There are nice things. Life can be sweet, but there are also thorns. And Genesis 3 helps us understand that the thorns are there, not just to balance out the roses, but the thorns are there for a very particular, very specific reason. And it's because the first man, Adam, the first woman, Eve, decided to listen to the serpent, to take the fruit, to disobey God, to put themselves in charge. And the immediate consequences of that, what followed straight away, is that they felt different. They felt shame. They felt fear. They started to blame one another. And we thought about that last week, those of you who are here. And you know, we're all still hiding because we all feel the shame and the fear and the insecurity. And we're all still blaming because we don't want to take the responsibility. And it all happened because we took the rule away from God. And that's what we're seeing really right through Genesis chapter 3, these massive, massive consequences from what Adam and Eve did. And the bit we're going to look at this morning is where Adam and Eve are sent away from the garden. And pretty much, apart from a few words from Adam, it's a commentary by God. It's God's explanation. So here's the thing. Life's got good things and bad things in it. Why? God here explains. And I invite you, I encourage you, just listen to what God has to say, how God says it's going to be in this world. So, first of all, God speaks, and he speaks to the serpent. And he speaks to the serpent about an epic struggle, an epic conflict, and that's in verses 14 and 15. All good films have lots of battles in them, lots of struggles, lots of fights. You can probably think of a few. I think there's a big fight scene at the end of True Grit. I know there's a big fight scene towards the end of Lethal Weapon 2, you know, where there's they're fighting and they're out in the sort of front garden somewhere and it starts raining. Do you remember that scene? Is it Riggs? The other? I don't know. The guy they're fighting, the main sort of protagonist, and they fight and they fight, you know, and you think one's been beaten and then they sort of stagger up again and I think eventually someone gets shot. There's an epic conflict, longer than a fight scene in a film, longer than a lifetime. Actually, for the history of the world since this moment, there's been this epic conflict going on. And God speaks to the serpent. And now the serpent is Satan. He's a form of Satan. We can't go into explaining that, but it's Satan that he's speaking to. A real person, spiritual being who's active in the world now. And Satan has persuaded Adam and Eve to ditch trusting God, get rid of that, and instead to trust themselves and really to trust the word of Satan. And what God says is that the repulsion, the sense of recoiling, the fight, the struggle that we feel with a snake is a description of the conflict that will go on throughout history between kind of good and evil. Throughout history, God says, there will be this struggle, this massive struggle between those who want to follow Satan and those who want to follow God, those who are evil and those who are good. Because we know evil. You know evil. And in some ways, we like evil. In some ways, we hate evil. We want to be good, but we just can't. There's this struggle always going on. And this fight between the serpent, between the devil, and humanity goes on throughout history until a decisive moment where something significant happens. We'll think about that in just a moment. So God speaks to the serpent, then God speaks to the woman, and he speaks to the woman about pain in families. That's verse 16. He says a strange thing. He says, you will have pain in childbearing. There's a woman in pain in childbearing, I think. It was sort of one of those library pictures, and I'm not sure whether she's actually giving birth, but the other pictures that looked like someone was giving birth were not really appropriate to show up here. They either were too messy or too distressing in some way. But I've observed people giving birth. It looks pretty tough to me. But it's pretty tough being the bloke, you know. Get up in the middle of the night, feel a bit faint, all those sort of things. I know. Now, is God just saying it's going to be painful giving birth? He says, I'm going to increase the pain in childbearing. Obviously, there was already some pain there. Is God just saying it's going to get a bit painful giving birth and that's it? That's all he's saying. I don't think so. I think what God is saying is there's going to be a disruption in all family relationships. Adam and Eve are meant for one another. We thought about that a few weeks ago. They're just right. They're just perfect one another. They perfectly fit one another. They perfectly complement one another. It should be a perfect relationship, but it's not going to be a perfect relationship now. There's going to be pain introduced to families, to childbearing, to having children, to having families. And God says the desire will be, your desire will be for your husband and he will rule over you. In a way, that's not new, but why does God say it? It's as though there's going to be a disruption to that relationship. Eve's going to feel her maternal instinct, but it's going to be all bent out of shape. Sometimes she wants to please the man. Her desire is that way. Sometimes she wants to rule over the man. Her desire is that way. Sometimes she wants to give. She always perhaps wants to give, but at the same time she feels the loss. She feels the pain. The children grow up and it hurts. And the man wants to give loving rule. He wants to rule well, but he can't always do that. Sometimes it's just cruel domination. And God explains that. He says, because you took the fruit, because you disobeyed, there's going to be a disruption in family life. There's going to be joy now in family life, but there's going to be pain. There's going to be the pain of rejection. There's going to be absent fathers. There's going to be angry mothers. There's going to be unwanted. There's going to be disappointing. There's going to be rebellious children. There's going to be cruel and violent husbands. What should be love and cherish is going to be desire and dominate. And the whole process of sadness is finally brought to an end in the ultimate sadness of death. The strongest families, the most robust families, the most together families are disrupted, are ripped apart by death. God speaks to the woman about family pain. He speaks to the man about hard work. We see that in verse 17 through to 19. And again, it's talking about a change in relationship, a change in connection. There's going to be now disorder in the world. The world now, the created world now, will not always operate perfectly in harmony. It's going to be hard work to eat and to live. Achievement's going to be difficult and costly. Just think about blackberries. It's a brilliant example of this. Do you like blackberries? I like blackberries. I don't like the pips of blackberries. Does someone else get pips stuck in their teeth? Maybe I need to go to the dentist. But blackberry pips are so annoying. They can stay in there for a good 6 months and annoy you. Every time you're talking to someone, you're trying to go, because life is not the same until you've got rid of them. But blackberries grow on bramble bushes, really. And they're a great example of this joy and pain, really, in working. There's the achievement of harvesting blackberries, which thankfully is not normally too difficult because the blackberries tend to be on the outside bit. But there's the joy of harvesting, but at the same time, the thing they grow on, the very thing they grow on, is scratchy. And persistently so. It always seems to get stuck on you. It always seems to rip part of your arm off as you're trying to get rid of them. And that's what life is going to be like, God says. The creation that was tilting towards the man and the woman is now just slightly tilting away from the man and the woman. There will be struggles. There will be scratches. There will be hurts. There will be achievement, but it will always be at cost. And it's as though the earth will always be slightly fighting back every time you try and subdue it, just like the weeds grow back in your garden just to spite you the day after you pick loads of them. Now all the paths are going to be just slightly uphill. The weeds are going to grow slightly better than the vegetables grow. Yeah, there'll be fruit. Yeah, there'll be fun. But all work, all enjoyment, all achievement will be spoilt by thistles. So God speaks to the man about hard work. And then finally, God speaks to himself about exclusion from the garden. See that from verse 22 onwards. The word curse is used a couple of times in what we just read together. And the idea of God cursing is not like a sort of a witch gives a kind of hex, you know, on a particular area or something and sort of blows a curse over there or something like that. It's not that idea. The idea of curse is simply the opposite of blessing. It's God removing some of the good stuff. It's God taking away some of the good stuff. That's what it means to curse. And what happens here is God takes himself away. God takes himself away really by taking the man and the woman away. They've thrown off the rule of God. And so God gives them, in a sense, what they want. They don't want God to rule over them. So he will remove them from his presence. He's going to take them away from the tree of life. They will not be sustained in life. After all the hard work, after all of making a space and a place to live, after all the cultivating, after all the sweating, after all the toiling, after all the achievement, they will die. That's what that expression, return to dust, You came out of the dust, you're going back to the dust. It's what we say at funerals. People die, they return to dust. They degenerate to the materials that makes them. God takes away the blessing. God separates himself from them. So the world's not just a mixture of good things and bad things in a random way. All the pain, all the hurt, all the sweat, all the blood spilled, all the death is because Adam and Eve ate the fruit. And it's fruit that bites back. And it bites back in all that you are experiencing today. You will have experienced in your life, however old you are, roses and thorns. You will have experienced good things and bad things. And it's not random. The bad things are there because Adam and Eve disobeyed God, because you disobeyed God. And ultimately, we will die. Now, what's that got to do with the celebration that we're going to have today of four people who want to be baptized? Let me just explain that for a few moments. The sin, the curse, the consequences, the pain, the shame, they're not the end of the story. Christianity is not a message about it's bad in the world, there's evil in the world, there's nasty people in the world, and I'm not sure we can do anything about it. That's not the Christian message. Do your best, hope for the best. That's not the Christian message. The Christian message is Jesus changes the consequences of sin. Let's think about that for a moment. Through Jesus, there is victory over evil. You know when God was speaking to Satan, the serpent, and he says, the serpent's head is going to get bruised, is going to get crushed, and the heel of the woman's offspring is going to get hurt a little bit as well. Now, in one way, that just talks about the conflict that I mentioned, but it points forward to something very special. Because Jesus is going to be that descendant of Eve. She's going to be the mother of the living, but she's also going to be the mother of the ultimate living one, Jesus Christ. And Jesus will be that descendant who crushes the serpent, who crushes Satan, who decisively wins the battle over evil. And although we do not see all of that shown now, the victory by Jesus was won. You see, he's dying on the cross, and he's paying the penalty for sin. He's dealing with the consequences of sin. And as he's spread out on the cross, he cries, "It is finished! Everything's been paid! The victory has been won!" Jesus reverses the curse. Jesus wins the victory over evil. And you know what? The people who get baptized this morning, they're not saying, "I've won a great victory over evil. I've sorted my life out. I know that I can do better. I'm a great achiever." What they're going to do is they're going to rise out of the baptismal pool and they're going to say, "Jesus rose from the dead. Jesus won the victory. I live because he lives." Through Jesus, there's victory over evil. Through Jesus, there's ultimately an end to the pain of relationships. Yeah, there still will be the pain of death and separation and people falling out. There will be brokenness in families, but ultimately in Christ, the relationship with God is mended and we're brought into a new family, a family called the church. There's a group of us here. There's a bigger group of the church throughout the world. And we're brought into that new family. And eventually, in God's goodness, we'll all be brought together in the presence of God in a big family. And all relationships are mended. Through Jesus, there's an end to the pain of relationships. And as the people today are baptized, what they're saying is, "I'm part of a new family. Not every hurt, Everything has been sorted, but I'm part of a new family. This local church, the big church throughout the world. I'm part of a new relationship with God and a new relationship with other people. Through Jesus, ultimately, there's an end to all pain in relationships. Through Jesus and his sacrifice, there's a way back to the presence of God. See what happens at the end of our chapter? The garden is defended by these things described as cherubim. They're like angels. They're not like kind of sweet little boys or something, but they're angels with flaming swords who keep out, for the time being, Adam and Eve and indeed anyone else. Throughout the Bible, they're guards. They're symbolized in the temple, which was where the Jews would worship God. They're symbolized in gold carvings. And they're to show that it's impossible now to get back into the presence of God. That's just a picture of one of the things in part of the temple that symbolized the presence of God. And over the top, those things with wings are symbolizing the cherubim. They're not the cherubim, they're just kind of symbolizing what they're doing. They're stopping us get back to the presence of God. And even to get into that room where that box is kept, there was a big thick curtain about 4 inches or more thick. So people couldn't get back into the presence of God in the temple. And that symbolized the fact that we can't get back to the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve couldn't get back. We can't get back. But in Jesus, there is a way back. Most of you probably know this, but at the moment that Jesus died, at the moment that he cried, "It is finished, the victory has been won," that curtain was ripped down the middle to say, now there is a way back into the presence of God. It's like the cherubim have been paid off, given their rations, sent away, job done. Now there is a way back to the presence of God. There is a welcome home. There is a come in. There is an enjoy. There is a know God as your father and your friend. And God will achieve that for them. Just like God makes clothes. See that in verse 21. He covers their shame. They got some clothes, but their clothes are inadequate. God wants to give them some clothes. He covers their shame. Just like that. Finally, ultimately, when Jesus comes, God can cover our shame and allow us back into the presence of God. And what the people being baptized today are going to do is say, I want to be friends with God. I want to be back friends with God in the presence of God. I want to be with God forever, and I know I can't be there because I'm just like Adam and Eve. I don't want God to rule over me. But they're saying through Jesus, all that shame, all that sin, all that wrong can be washed away. And when they go into the water, they're not going to get their sins forgiven. They've already been forgiven. But they're going to show as they go in the water, I've been washed clean. My sins have been taken away. I can now go back into the presence of God. No rituals are needed. No sacrifices are needed. I can get back to the presence of God. I can know God now, right now, as my Father and friend. I can know that one day I will be with him forever in his presence without shame, without fear. And that's what they're saying as they get baptized. These four people have recognized that they share in the sin of Adam. They need God to clothe them. They need God to forgive them. They need Jesus. So through Jesus' sacrifice, there's a way back to the presence of God. And then the earth will be restored. All the pain, all the hurt, all the brokenness, all the anxiety, all the loss, all the hard work, all the sweat, all the toil, all the difficulty, all the curse. Not just to do with us, but to do with the world, the creation, how the creation is disturbed and how thistles and thorns grow and how things are disturbed and how the tectonic plates don't quite work right and how sometimes we get hit by things from outer space. All that's not quite right in the world gets put right in the new heavens and the new earth through Jesus. So roses and thorns. There are good things that we experience. There are bad things. What are you going to conclude after this morning? That's just life. It's just random. Some good things happen and some bad stuff happens and then we die. Is that your conclusion? Or will you accept God's explanation? God says this is why it happens, because Adam and Eve sinned and you sinned. But God also says there is a way back. There is a way out of the curse. There is a restoration to friendship with God. Do you want that? That's what the people being baptized have said. They've said, I want that. I want God as my friend. I want my sins to be forgiven. Do you want that this morning? There's no bar. There's nothing stopping you. All you need to do is to say, yes, I'm a sinner. Yes, I really do need Jesus to put some decent clothes on me, to take me back to the presence of God. And I invite all of you to say that to God. I want Jesus to put me right with God, and we know that he will do that.